Let me tell you, Pennsylvania is an incredible state. I've been there a lot. But what we're about to talk with you about in just a moment are a series of strange occurrences that have occurred in Pennsylvania. Really mysterious Pennsylvania with Stan Gordon next on Coast to Coast AM. Stan Gordon was 16 when the Kecksburg UFO crash incident occurred not far from his hometown of Greensburg, Pennsylvania. The case started him on an incredible lifelong investigation into the UFO phenomenon and other very strange encounters. Stan has been out there in the field conducting on-scene investigations since 1965. Been taking calls from the public concerning unusual events since 69. He's also the producer of the video documentary Kecksburg, The Untold Story. Here's Stan Gordon. Stan, how are you?
Doing fine. Good morning, George. It's great to talk to you again.
Likewise, too. And is this a typo? Were you last on with me almost 7 years ago?
It's been quite a while.
My God, it's almost like just like yesterday. How have you been?
Doing very good. Keeping busy as usual. Always a lot of strange happenings here in Pennsylvania.
Oh, my gosh. Tell me, what is it about Pennsylvania, Stan, that has all these strange things happening?
Well, I can't really tell you for sure what that is, but there's been a long history of all kind of phenomena here from UFO sightings. I mean, my records here go back to the 1890s up to the present day. So there have been recordings of strange objects in the sky for many, many years. And, of course, a lot of other phenomena here, too, strange animal sightings and just all kind of mysteries. And Pennsylvania has quite a lore from throughout the Keystone State.
Absolutely. For a lot of new people, Stan, who they're not familiar with the Kecksburg story, give us a little primer on that.
Well, that happened back on December 9, 1965, and as you said, I was 16 years old, but my interest actually started when I was 10. And just to give a little background how I got started, my birthday, coincidentally, is Halloween Eve, and on my 10th birthday, my parents gave me a new AM radio, and I was tuning around a radio dial that night because of the Halloween season. There was some radio discussion about strange, unusual happenings, flying saucers, hauntings, unusual events. And I was very curious, and I began to go to the local library and read all the information they had on the topic. And as years went by, I began to cut new stories out and make scrapbooks. And then I was 16 when the event happened, about 12 miles from my hometown of Greensburg in a little village of Kecksburg, PA. That evening, the event, I was tuning into KDK Radio in Pittsburgh because they had a talk radio show called Contact, and the host was Mike Levine. And coincidentally, that night they had a guest on who was Frank Edwards, who you, I'm sure, was familiar with.
Absolutely.
Who was a reporter who had written some books on flying saucers.
Yep.
And almost the entire program was devoted to the fact that there had been a massive sighting over several states from the tip of Ontario, this fiery object which had come in over a widespread area. And as the object came in over the greater Pittsburgh area, the news media, law enforcement agencies were deluged with phone calls. Many people thought initially that an aircraft was on fire coming across the sky. And there was, of course, there was a lot of information I didn't know at that time. It took many, many years of investigation, which we're still investigating the case today, getting input still coming in on it. But what we found out was that this object proceeded in over the Pittsburgh area. It moved out into Westmoreland County over Greensburg and moved roughly out towards Route 30 East. But then it made a turn to the south. And people all along those small farming communities reported seeing this object moving across the sky, moving out towards the mountains at North Laurelville, where we are told that the object made another turn. It began to come back towards Kecksburg, made another turn, and went down into the woods. And those people who saw that object descend said it didn't come down at a high rate of speed, but it came down almost like a controlled landing. And then right after it fell, there was a column of kind of bluish-gray smoke that rose up out of the woods, but that dissipated very quickly. Now, over the years, we've learned a lot more about that case. What we now know is this, that within a relatively short time after it fell, some local people went down into the woods to investigate. And they came across a large, semi-buried, metallic object that some witnesses described basically like a large metallic acorn shape, semi-buried in the ground. The object was estimated to be about 10 to 12 feet in length, about 8 to 10 feet in diameter. As one witness described it, he said it looked to him almost like if somebody took liquid metal and poured into an acorn-shaped mold. That's how it looked. There were no rivets, no seams, no weld marks, no fuselage. But on the bottom end of what they would describe as the acorn was this raised-up area. One witness called it the bumper area, the ring area. And up on that were the raised-up markings that after he looked at these things and later went through libraries to try to figure out what this may have been, he said they were more like symbols. And he said the closest thing he could think of that it resembled was like ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics. And we could talk for days and days about it. It's an amazing story. But what we now know is this. Within a relatively short time after the object fell, and this was about 4:47 in the afternoon, it's almost dark. Within a relatively short time, over the next few hours, the military began to come into the small farming community. The area was cordoned off. The military went in and made a search. There was a lot of people that began to descend on that small community because the radio and TV in the greater Pittsburgh area were broadcasting this. As the evening wore on, there was a lot of news stories unfolding. It was the major news story on the radio around Pittsburgh that evening, made front pages of the papers the next day, locally and across the country. And papers talked about the fact that there was a military presence. So that evening, not only were there many hundreds of people that came in from different parts of western Pennsylvania to try to get a look at the object that reportedly had fallen, but also you had many reporters on the scene from Pittsburgh radio, TV, newspapers, who also themselves were able to observe the fact that there was a military presence there. And, of course, the next day, there's a lot of news stories. We didn't know at that time about the fact that there was indeed an object actually on the ground. It was supposition that there was. But the next day, the official explanation was that nothing had fallen. There was a search. Nothing had been found. That people had seen a bright meteor in the sky. And over many, many years of investigation, talking to hundreds of people who have direct or indirect knowledge of the case, the object apparently was taken out of that area about 1 o'clock in the morning. And from the information we have, it went to Lockbourne Air Force Base outside of Columbus, Ohio, during the early morning hours of December 10th. A gentleman had approached me before the Unsolved Mystery Show in 1990 and told me, and we were able to check his credentials out, that he had been a part of an Air Force security team who had guarded the object when it came into Lockbourne Air Force Base that morning. He said the security on the base was very, very high. In fact, it was even higher than when President Kennedy had visited the base previous to that. Wow. And they backed the object on a flatbed into this hangar, and they were basically given a shoot-to-kill order to anybody that didn't have the proper clearance to get anywhere near that hangar.
Shoot-to-kill stand?
And that's what I was told. Right. And anyhow, also he indicated that he was only there for a short time and later heard that the object went from that base over to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And other witnesses independently told us about how the object did come into Wright-Patterson and was transported to a warehouse building on the base. Now, where that object is today, of course, we have no idea.
This object, in terms of shape, sounds strangely familiar to what the late policeman Lonnie Zamora saw in Socorro, New Mexico, this egg-shaped craft.
Well, they discovered more of like an acorn-shaped object. And kind of described like of an unusual off-gold, almost like a gold-bronze color. Again, no rivets, no seams, no fuselage, with unusual symbol-type markings at the bottom of the object.
Now, in this, and we're going to get more into Kecksburg tonight, Stan, but this was just one of the facets of the many mysterious things that had you do your work with really mysterious Pennsylvania. It's beyond just Kecksburg. It's Bigfoot and other weird encounters. It's all kinds of things out there, isn't it?
Oh, yes. It's just amazing. You know, I started, again, many, many years ago. And when I set up this hotline back in 1969, and, of course, relatively still young back then, I began to make contact with the local news media and the police departments and try to make them aware that I was taking this study very seriously. And I was hopeful that if they got any reports in these categories, they would consider at least letting me know about them. And it was interesting that over weeks and months, as information got out about my hotline, that my phone began to ring day and night in the house.
Yeah,
and
tell me. Go ahead.
Yes, I was just being overwhelmed with calls, and I realized this was more than I could do on my own.
How did you get the information out on your hotline?
Well, it was in some of the local papers that I was interested in this, and I was going to be looking into these reports. And then some of the local police, as they got calls, they began to locally let people know that I was around, and they would tell people, well, there's a fellow locally who's interested in these type of things. Well, the reports began to come in great numbers, and I realized that this was much more than I could handle on my own. And I realized to properly evaluate these cases, I needed research people, scientists, engineers, technicians, people who had the background to evaluate what people were reporting. So that was my goal back then, to establish a volunteer group of research people that could respond to these type of reports. And so in 1970, I founded the first of three volunteer research groups to investigate these type of reports, and that was the Westmoreland County UFO Study Group. And with my electronics background, we set up quite an elaborate communication center in my home, and I set up a two-way radio system so that we could radio dispatch certain of the investigators in some areas to the scene of these events, getting there very quickly. And it was my hope to try to get teams of people and or investigators out there 24 hours a day to respond to these type of reports. And, of course, we were all doing this out of our own time and pocket. We all had full-time jobs, but we were able to set this up and do this. And over the years, we investigated literally thousands of cases with the three groups I had. And it just is unbelievable the type of cases and investigations that we uncovered at the time.
How critical was it for you, Stan, for you and in any members of your group to go out to the scene?
Well, it was so important to try to get there. Hopefully, our objective was to get there while the phenomenon was ongoing. And in many cases, we were there within a relatively short time, with hours to days or whatever, in some cases, depending on distance. But we were there quite often soon after the event occurred. And that was so interesting and so important to document what was going on, because you got to see the human reaction, the emotional reactions of people. The evidence was still fresh, and in some cases we investigated, especially during this massive wave of reports during 1973 with all these major Bigfoot sightings going on, that you could see the animal reactions, which was something that nobody could have fabricated. And so we were able to document it. In many cases, those various types of physical evidence that we found at the scene, we gathered the information as best we could, and it was quite a time to live through, I can tell you that.
Stan, give us an overview of the kinds of calls you got and the types of people who called in.
Well, first of all, let me say that one thing I learned many years ago going out into the field, and even the same persists today, that when you take time to properly investigate these reports, well, many cases, whether it be UFO sightings or other type of anomalies, many seem very strange and unusual on the surface, but many are determined to either man-made or natural in explanation. And I'll give you an example of this. This past September 19th, I believe it was last year, right before 8 o'clock, I had just returned home, and the phone started ringing here, and I happened to look, and emails were starting to come in from all across the state, one after the other, and there were multiple reports coming in just before 8 o'clock of this bright, somewhat cone-shaped light, beaming down light from the sky, reports coming in from different parts of Pennsylvania. And from the information coming in, it appeared to be some type of very high-altitude sighting. From past experience and something similar which had shown up, it was my feeling it was something probably related to the space program. So I started making some phone calls, and I also called Peter Davenport at the National UFO Reporting Center. Mm-hmm. And, yes, he indeed had been receiving similar reports from other states as well. And first call I made was to Wallops Island, Virginia, to the NASA launch facility down there. And just by sheer coincidence, yes, indeed, they had launched a sounding rocket where they had done conducting a high-altitude experiment, which seemed to correlate with at least the reports that I was receiving. And that seemed to be the explanation for a lot of the reports that came in. So a lot of things can be explained, but there's that percentage of reports all the time that are not so easily dismissed. And when you go back, as you had mentioned, going back years after years, you know, I've talked to people from all walks of life, from children to adults, from all type of backgrounds, state troopers, military and commercial pilots, nurses, doctors, people from all backgrounds who report these type of events. And most people, even today, Most people don't want any publicity. Many of them were very frightened by what they encountered. They wanted explanations for what was going on, because it was hard for them in many cases to deal with it. And it still is the same way today. People still want explanations because they're seeing things they can't figure out what they're encountering.
Linda Moulton always talked about 20% of crop formations are unexplainable. And as I've told her, I said, Linda, all you need is just one crop formation. It doesn't matter if 99 out of 100 are all man-made. If that one is there that is not to be explained by any conventional means, and maybe it's made in some bizarre way, I said, that's all you need. That's the story. And I would guess, Stan, the same with many of your investigations, that even if many of them were explainable by natural or man-made events, all you need is that one, don't you?
Oh, I agree 100%. And, you know, every year the percentages are different. I mean, every year there are some cases you cannot easily dismiss. And there have been certain years that there was a lot more activity than others. Last year was, you know, fairly active with some pretty interesting reports that came in across the state. And but I don't think anything was even close to the events we experienced back during the wave of 1973 into 1974, which was just an amazing time to live through the events that were taking place here.
And what were the ranges of things that people called in during that period?
Well, you may recall back in the fall of 1973, the United States experienced this massive wave of UFO sightings that was making the headlines and the news and on TV for many, many weeks.
Throughout the Midwest, too, I believe.
Correct. But here in Pennsylvania, it began January 1st and continued all year. There were literally hundreds of UFO reports were coming in. But it was in the summer of 1973 that the most interesting aspect began to occur. And this all began, actually, I believe, on August the 7th, when I received a phone call from a family member of a person who had lived in a rural area outside of Greensburg here in Westmoreland County, and had told me that this gentleman had just returned home from being in the hospital, and he had an experience that I should talk to him about, which would have occurred on July 31st. And I got a hold of him that day, and I went out to interview him right away. And I went out to find out that evening, it was a warm night in July, he had the bathroom window open. He was getting shaving, cleaning up, because he got up early to go to work. And he began to smell this funny odor. He said it was like rotten cucumbers. And he turned around to look, for whatever reason, at the bathroom window. And here in the window, these two large glowing red eyes staring at him. But the window's 8 feet off the ground. And they had dogs outside, but the dogs weren't barking, which was very unusual, because generally they bark if anybody's around the house. So he ran out in the other room and got some of the other family members, and they could smell the odor. But, of course, whatever was in the window was now gone. And I guess the gentleman had some type of heart condition. I guess he went to the hospital and ambulance after that event. And I went out to talk to him that day on August 7th, interviewed him. While I was there, I found out that a number of weeks before, some of the boys in the area were taking a shortcut over to the local mall, and it was quite a rural area, a lot of brush around there. And as they were taking the walk, they heard this commotion in the brush around there, and they thought it was a deer. So they began to throw some rocks in there, and instead of a deer coming out, here comes this large, upright, hairy, man-like creature with very long arms swinging, crossing the road and going up the hill behind their house.
Let's pick that up, Stan, when we come back. This hairy creature. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, thanks for tuning in to Coast AM. We're with Stan Gordon today talking about his work in Pennsylvania, really mysterious Pennsylvania. We're going to get into all the different facets of this. All right, Stan, you were telling us a story about some witnesses seeing this large, hairy creature. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the fellows see this thing walking up across the road up behind their home. So I asked the person on the property if it was all right if I went up and look around on the property. And some of the kids asked if they could go along. I said, sure, let's go up and take a look. So we're up there walking around for a while and really didn't see too much. And I'm just about ready to leave the area when I happened to look down. And there in front of me, and everybody kind of gasped, we saw it was the strangest three-toed footprint I had ever seen. It was 13 inches long, 8 inches wide, very well-defined three-toed track. I got on the radio, called one of my associates to come out. We took photos and measurements, made a cast of the footprint. And coincidentally, while we're out in the field, we get a radio call that one of our investigators up north of Pittsburgh, almost to the Ohio line up in Beaver County, that morning had looked into a report that the police were investigating of a person who claimed they had seen a large hairy creature looking through a window, I believe, of a mobile home. And the police had found some large footprints up there as well. Well, that was the beginning of this large, extensive wave of creature activity that went on for weeks and months throughout a large area of western Pennsylvania. Now, you know, lots of times you hear about a Bigfoot sighting happening in one small community, but this was taking place over a seven-county area, plus some other areas reporting some possible activity, and also about the same time down in Lancaster, down in the Pennsylvania Dutch country, there was some reports coming in of some creature sightings as well. So we had our teams responding to these cases basically 24 hours a day. It was just amazing the amount of reports that were coming in. We would be on the scene of one event. We might get a call from police department that there was another incident they needed us on, and we'd respond over to that. And there were so many cases that were just so intriguing. And, I mean, I can tell you about some of those events. And a lot of the reports we were getting, generally creatures about 7 to 9 feet tall, even though there were some reports of smaller ones, generally dark hair, no neck, arms very long, hanging down past knees, generally walking upright. In some cases, there were more than one creature reported. In many cases, there were multiple eyewitnesses. Many of the sightings occurred actually in daylight. Not all the sightings were in the evening. And there were certain areas where they seemed to frequent more. One area that there was a lot of activity was going on was along the Westmoreland County edge along the Chestnut Ridge. And the Chestnut Ridge is a very active area for all type of for many different types of anomalies. Chestnut Ridge is a mountain range that runs from Preston County, West Virginia, up through Westmoreland, Fayette, and Indiana County in southwest Pennsylvania. And there has been a long history of repeated phenomena almost year after year along the ridge area. UFO sightings, reports of strange animals, underground sounds over the years, many different types of anomalies that different people call in about. And even in recent years, we still get activity up along that area. There was quite a bit of Bigfoot activity reported again up in Fayette County. And I'm sure before the night ends, you'll hear that term Fayette County quite often, because it's been basically been a hotbed for many, many years of this activity.
Stan, the description of the creature, did anybody say whether it seemed like it could be treacherous or dangerous, or did they say it had an intelligence behind it, seemed friendly? What did they say?
Well, in a lot of the reports, and a lot of people saw these things at very close range. These things appear to be very curious of humans, of human activity. In some cases, they may have, you know, approached not real close, but fairly close, depending on what was going on. But generally, they turned around when they were seen. There were incidents that happened during that time where people actually did shoot at these creatures with various type of weapons.
Oh, geez.
But in no cases were there any indications that creatures were hurt or have been brought down in any of these type of events. And it was a very, very interesting series of cases. But as time went on and we had all these reports of these creatures going on and a lot of UFO activity going on, and we went into the investigation very open-mindedly, because we're going into these cases with the assumption from what we were getting initially that we appear to be dealing with some type of unknown primate, which historically there had been some history of Bigfoot sightings in Pennsylvania and, of course, from around the country and many other parts of the world. And but as time went on, we began to receive some reports. And, again, back then, a lot of the reports were initially coming into the police departments or news media, and in a lot of the reports they were referring them over to our group to follow up with an investigation, even though back then – some of the cases, the local police or state police did investigate some of the reports. And some odd reports began to happen, which began to make us wonder more and more exactly what we were dealing with. And, you know, I must tell you this, after so many years of investigation, going on 51 years this year, that I've been doing this investigation. I've never seen a UFO. I've never had a Bigfoot encounter. But I've investigated many, many reports, and I've seen a lot of evidence over the years that there's something going on. But I never had my own experience out there.
Stan, you know, some of the stories we continue to hear that it could be an ape. It could be something dimensional. Some people think maybe it's an ET. What do you think? What's your gut tell you?
Well, as these, especially during the 73 wave, there were things that began to take place that had us all, I can tell you, scratching our head. There were incidents where there were trails of footprints that just suddenly stopped and vanished when the ground conditions were conducive for other type of tracks, more tracks, so they just weren't there. There were incidents that began to occur, and I'll give you a few examples. September 27th, I believe, up in Beaver County, two women out in the rural area are standing there waiting for a friend to come by to pick them up when they see this large, hairy creature, and this one was covered with white hair. Now, you don't hear about them very often, but occasionally get reports of white, colored Bigfoot-type creatures. This thing was running across the road ahead of them, going towards a wooded area, but just seeing the creature alone was fascinating and very unusual, but it was carrying a small sphere of glowing white light in one hand. And as it ran into the woods a short time later, an object appeared in the sky, which they thought at first was an aircraft, but it came over the area and projected a beam of light down into the woods where the creature had ran into. So that was a kind of a fascinating report. And then we began to get other reports as well, which made us really wonder what was going on. But there was a real intriguing event that happened on February 6, 1974, that made us really wonder exactly what we're dealing with, and it gave us a new dimension of the fact that we might be dealing with something more than just a flesh and blood creature in some of these cases.
All right, what happened?
February 6, 1974. For those listeners who were around back that time, they'll remember that there was a national trucker strike going on around the country, that there was some violence on the highway back then. So in Pennsylvania during that time, you had the National Guard patrolling with the Pennsylvania State Police. So on this particular event, the State Police Barracks at Uniontown received a report of this incident that happened up in the mountains not far from Ohio Pile. And when information we got, and we couldn't get up there early the next morning because we couldn't get any gas till that morning. We got up there very early the next day. But anyhow, we found out that this woman had lived out in the woods all her life. She was very familiar with the wildlife, and she lived in a little cabin out there, and she had heard this commotion out on her porch. Now, she had some garbage over there in the corner, some tin cans, and she heard the tin cans rattling. So there had been a pack of dogs, wild dogs coming through there, thought the dogs had returned to the area. So she loads her shotgun with one round of ammunition, was going to just fire over the head of the dogs and scare them away. So she turns on her porch light and opens up the door, steps out the door, and instead of the dogs being there, just a few feet right and directly in front of her is this very large, 7-foot-tall, hairy creature with its arms straight up over its head. And I remember exactly what she said to me. She never called it a Bigfoot. She said, it looked like a great big hairy ape. So what does she do? She fires right directly into that creature.
Oh.
And she said, there's a bright flash of light like somebody took a picture, and it vanished right in front of her eyes. Now, her family, her in-laws, lived about 100 feet away. They heard the gunshot. They called her on the phone, asked her what happened. She explained them what occurred. So her son-in-law grabbed his pistol and made his way up towards her home, and he said that he was pretty much surrounded by four or five kind of like shadows of hairy people with glowing red eyes, like coals of fire. And he began to shoot randomly right at him, and he ran into the house. When they looked out the window, here's this large object of different colored lights. He said, like a Christmas ornament hovering over the trees at the same time.
Oh, my.
So they called the state police. And the state police, it was a pretty good distance up there. By the time they got there, of course, whatever was there was gone. But what the investigating officer told me, and then later that evening, another trooper and some other National Guardsmen arrived on the scene as well. These people had a lot of animals up there, including several large dogs. I believe it was an Eskimo Spitz. I think it was a German Shepherd. But the trooper said it was just incredible to see how the dog's reacting. And the fact that they weren't reacting at all, that those dogs should have been carrying on barking. He actually reached inside of one of the cages, tried to pull one of the dogs out. The dog wouldn't even move, should have ripped his arm off. And the horses were moving up an area they generally didn't go. There were cats, we were told, in the house, were hiding under the sofa. In that case, they had a young child. They said it was unusually upset that night when all this activity was going on. So we were up there the next morning very early. We met with an animal officer, and we were interviewing the people involved, and we were searching that area. And right in line, we went out in the middle of the woods, and right in line where the woman shot at the creature, there was a pattern, a BB pattern in that tree right in line where she had shot at this thing. And very interesting story. Now, there was no indication that these people had made up this story. I mean, what was the motive?
Right.
And if this was true, now this gave us a clue to the fact that why is it that maybe in some cases we have no physical evidence of these creatures, yet there's been hundreds and hundreds of reports, not only in the United States but in other parts of the world, and as many of the skeptics say, why haven't there been any bodies? And again, I keep a very open-minded attitude towards this. I'm not saying that all of these creatures may fall in this category, but again, we just don't know enough about it. And the more we looked at some of these reports, the more it indicated there were maybe more to this mystery than we had any idea about.
Well, I got to tell you, Stan, the fact that nobody really has been able to find one, physically find one, and present it to us, kind of tips the scale that maybe if it is dimensional or ET related, that they merely just disappear or take off.
Yeah,
they're gone.
And I have other cases which suggest that we uncovered as well.
If they're dimensional, let's talk about that for just a second. Why on earth are they stumbling into us in this dimension?
And again, there are so many unanswered questions. I mean, of all the reports we've looked into of these creatures, of other phenomena, which I'm sure we'll talk about tonight, there's, you know, my position as investigator is to go out, interview the people, gather the information, but I don't have the answers. And the more I know about the mysteries we deal with, the more there's many unanswered questions, and we just don't have the answers for them.
Now, you remember George Lucas's Star Wars,
yes.
Right? Chewbacca, the Wookiee, looked
yes.
just like a Bigfoot, didn't he?
In somewhat, yes.
So, so if it's an E.T., you know, it could be one of those races, one of those types that just have been coming here for a long, long time. I wonder if they could even have been the giants that the Bible talked about. Who knows?
There's much speculation. And we had some very interesting cases where, and this is something that has always caused much controversy, but they were very well documented, where both a UFO and Bigfoot were seen at the same time and place.
Yeah, here we go. Now, haven't there also been reports of strange men, mystery men, showing up during some of these incidents?
Yes, we did. We had some interesting cases that occurred over the years, and not just during the 73 way, but in cases that have happened over the years since then of events we investigate in Pennsylvania. I should tell you a little bit about probably one of the classic cases and then bring in that part of the story and how it relates
okay.
to that event that happened.
Sure.
Again, up in Fayette County back in 1973.
All right. Go ahead.
Okay. October 25th, 1973. I'm going to give you an abbreviated version of this right now. That day was pretty active with early morning UFO reports coming in from Pennsylvania, other reports later that evening. About 10:30 that night, I received a phone call from a state trooper who had just come back from investigating a UFO landing with a creature sighting on a farm outside of Uniontown, Pennsylvania. So what I learned was that about 9 o'clock that night, a number of people in that area had observed this large red spherical object about as big as a barn, hovering about 100 feet up in the air. And as they watched this thing, it was beginning to drop closer towards the pasture. So the farmer's son and two young neighbor boys decided to go up to investigate. So this farmer's son went in and grabbed a .30-06 rifle and grabbed some ammunition, which included two tracer rounds. They proceeded down this farm road and proceeded towards the pasture area. and they had their truck, and they kind of angled the truck on the hill with their headlights on so they could see a visual path where they were going. And they noticed that the headlights seemed to be dimming as though something was draining the power. Now, as they're approaching that area, they're hearing two things. One, they're hearing like a high-pitched whirling sound, almost something like a loud lawnmower, and what appeared to be like moaning baby crying sounds in the distance. So they're proceeding up to the pasture. When they get on top of there, they're amazed as to what they're seeing. About 250 feet away, here's this large object which now appears to be right on the ground or right above it. It's no longer a sphere. It's now more like a half a hemisphere. It's like a bright white dome-shaped object. The bottom appears to be pretty much flat, and it's illuminating the whole area. It's making this high-pitched whirring sound, I should say. And they're all standing there in amazement. They can't believe what they're watching, what they're seeing there. And as they're watching the object, they also notice that about 75 feet away, there is a barbed wire fence line, posted about 6 feet tall. But what caught their attention was that there are these two tall figures moving along the fence line in their direction.
Human-like?
Well, at first they thought they were bear. And then they realized one's about eight and a half foot tall, the other's about 7 feet tall. They're bipedal, they're upright, they're covered with long, dark, kind of grayish brownish hair. They have glowing green eyes, and the arms are almost down to the ground, they're so long. Well, the largest the creature is in front, and they're kind of walking with kind of a stiffness to them. And the one creature, when it takes this long stride and reaches this one fence post, it leaves out this moaning, whining sound. And then the second creature has to take even a longer stride because it's smaller to catch up with the other one. And they keep doing this as they're going along the fence. Well, the one boy was already very upset. He ran out of the field. The other fellow is telling the older fellow with the gun, shoot him. So finally he fires over top of the head. The first round is a tracer round, so it's just a flash of light. He fires the second tracer, and the largest of two creatures kind of whines and reaches out about the same time as to grab that tracer. And the moment it grabs for it, the object in the field vanishes. It doesn't take off. It just disappears.
Like it
the
went
sound
through a
goes out. The lights goes out. It's gone.
Amazing. And Stan, let's finish up with that when we come back, and then we'll talk about some reports of thunderbirds and some other very bizarre things going on in Pennsylvania. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our special guest, Stan Gordon. Stan, did you want to wrap up that those strange creatures, and then we'll get into some of these UFO cases?
Yes. On that case, once again, that he had fired that tracer and the object in the field had disappeared after that largest creature reached out almost to grab at that tracer round. And at that point, the two creatures turned around and began to walk in the opposite direction towards the woods. Well, the object again had disappeared, but the two fellows in the field noticed that the area around where the object had been appeared to be now glowing. And they ran out of there. They went back to the farmhouse. They told the family what happened. They took them to a neighbor's house, and they called the state police. And the trooper came out about 45 minutes later to investigate it. And they went up in the patrol car. And as the trooper told us, when he got up in the area, the whole area where the object had been was self-luminescent and glowing, about 100 feet or more in diameter. He said the farm animals wouldn't go anywhere near it. He said he shined his flashlight beam into it. He could barely see it. He said if he had a newspaper, he could have probably sat down within that glowing area and read the newspaper from the light that was coming off of it.
That's pretty intense.
I'm sorry?
That was pretty intense light.
Yes. And, again, there's a lot more to the story, but I should mention I was had working on two books for quite a while. The Really Mysterious Pennsylvania just came out. There's a second book that I have in the works, should be out in the next couple of months, called Silent Invasion, the Pennsylvania UFO Bigfoot Casebook, which is going to focus on all those events of 73 and 74. So So there'll be a lot more detail about this case and other cases as well in that book that'll be coming out also.
How many cases have you investigated over the years in your career?
Oh, literally thousands. It's unbelievable. I have no idea what the exact number, but if you could see my filing system, it's just quite amazing of the reports that come in year after year. Now, I had my three volunteer research group for many, many years. Since 1993, I've been working as an independent researcher, but I still continue to investigate cases as I can and to document cases here in Pennsylvania.
We'll get into some crypto cases in the next half hour, Stan, but let's talk about some of these UFO encounters that you looked at as well, and then we'll get into some mini UFOs. What good ones come to mind right now?
Well, there's been a lot of very interesting cases, and as I mentioned here in the book, Really Mysterious Pennsylvania, there have been some very interesting, very close reports. Probably one of the reports that you would probably call kind of a typical report was an incident that happened in 1983 outside of Derry, Pennsylvania. And a gentleman was driving down Route 217 outside of Derry. This, again, is along the Chestnut Ridge, which we talked about earlier.
Okay.
And he's riding down the road, and all of a sudden he notices right ahead of him a series of kind of amber lights that are very low, actually very low above the roof of his vehicle as he's approaching. And these amber lights he soon realizes are attached to this very large, solid, round object that is only about 40, 60 feet above him, he estimates. The object, he estimates, maybe 200 or more feet in diameter. It's taken on both sides of the highway. There's all these lights going around. At the bottom appears to be basically flat. It's kind of a battleship gray in color with kind of a bluish tinge to it. And at the bottom area, there's this flat area, maybe a square rectangular area, maybe 40, 60 feet or so, giving him the impression this may be some type of a doorway. And the object is so large and the lights are so and reflective on there that he said it gave him the impression as though he was driving into an underground parking lot, that he began to feel claustrophobic from this thing. And this thing hovered over there, and he accelerated away from this thing, and suddenly the thing accelerated down the road and hovered over a vehicle the second time, very, very low. In fact, he thought it was going to hit the carrier on top of his vehicle. It was so low. And again, a third time, he hurried down the road, and the thing once again followed him down the road, hovered right over his vehicle until it finally left the area. He said it was making a very intense, almost like a bassy sound, like a throbbing that was penetrating through his body when he was underneath this object. He said it just vibrated right through him. And finally, the thing did take off, and he was very upset, and he called the local police, which is how I got the report on it. But that's just typical of some of the kind of reports we have. One of the earliest cases I investigated that I always thought was very interesting happened back in February of 1968. And this was, I would consider it a very classic case, and very interesting because it involved two brothers who, unfortunately, both have now passed away in recent years. Mm-hmm. And these two brothers actually used to get into fistfights over the UFO subject because the one brother believed they exist and the other one was animate that they could not exist. Well, that brother later went into the Navy, and he worked on one of our biggest aircraft carriers and worked with the latest aviation technology. So he was very familiar with all the aircraft at that time. He had came home after he got married in February '68, and he and his new wife had rented this little farmhouse out in the country. And this one late afternoon, he happened to look out the window. It was supposed to have some snow coming in, and he observed this kind of like a probe right outside of his window. And the probe, as he looked, was attached to this object about 50 feet away and about 50 feet above a pond. And here is this large, solid, dome-shaped object. Lights on it, had windows in that look almost like computers or some type of lights inside, movement inside. And there was like what he described like a catwalk along the outside of this main, large, solid object. He said also it was kind of battleship gray in color. Hmm. And as he's watching, here's a small humanoid-type figure comes out on the catwalk, and it's joined buy a second one at some point. He calls his wife to come out and look at this thing, and they go outside and they're looking at this thing face to face, and she starts screaming. And as they're watching this thing, it's still there for quite a while. He gets his brother on the phone, the one who believed in it. He called him, who lived several miles away, and they came out, and the thing was still there. But it was now had gained altitude. I believe it was about 100 feet up at that point. It was beginning to snow pretty well, and they got in their vehicle and started to follow it. But they watched as this thing accelerated up into the sky, and finally, in a matter of seconds, it looked like a bright star going across the sky. And they had called the local airport, who told them that, yes, they had received some other reports as well. So here was a case of a fellow who was completely against the reality of UFOs until he had his own experience.
And, changed his life forever, didn't it, Stan?
Yes, it changed his life forever.
You have investigated what some call mini UFO reports. What are they?
Well, yes, been very interesting cases going back for many years of these very small objects that range in size anywhere from a few inches to about a foot in diameter. And I remember hearing some of the first reports that I heard about was probably back in the late 60s. I remember there was one case, I believe, on a golf course around Pittsburgh where some golfers were out there playing their game, and the small object was right above their heads, kind of moving up and down, and they were swinging their golf clubs at it, and every time they'd swing it, it'd move out of range. And then another fascinating one, I'm going by memory here, yeah. 1980s, I had a report up around Punxsutawney, PA, of a woman who told me she had her kitchen window open when one of these small spheres went into the window and began to float around in her kitchen. She grabbed her broom and swung at this thing, and she said she hit it, and it broke into two identical spheres that moved around into her home, and then they finally went out the window. And during that wave of reports back in 1973, in November of 73, I received a report from the police about an incident happened up in, out in Hemphill Township, which I went out and investigated. And there was a group of people out there. They were out there at some friends' homes out in the country, and they had the windows of the cars down at the time, and they noticed this plum-sized object, greenish in color, that went inside one vehicle and floated around inside that vehicle, and then it went into another vehicle and floated around in there as well. And right after they had noticed this, they observed what appeared to be like a thin, rather I should say like a wide beam of light, wider than a normal flashlight beam, that suddenly shot up from the ground up into the sky and vanished. And I learned that one of the cars where the small sphere had been in, about a day or two later, that window shattered for some unknown reason. And so I've heard these reports before. And, you know, in the book Really Mysterious Pennsylvania, there's some pretty interesting reports. One was one that happened December 31st of 1984 out near Level Green, Pennsylvania. And what occurred was that a man and his sister were sitting there in the living room when all of a sudden there was these two loud taps on the living room window. And the drapes were open at the time, and a man happened to look in there right at the window, moving slowly towards the right side, and right in front of the window was this bright red basketball-shaped sphere. Now, this thing was not illuminated, but it was bright red. And it went across the window, and he ran over and watched as this thing rose up over the neighbor's home. And he said this sphere had like two bright beams of light that it was giving off, and it was giving off some sparking around it as well. So anyhow, he turned on the lights, and he watched this thing rose up over the window, then it vanished. And a short time later, he went back to sit down, and again, they heard these taps on the window, and he and his sister both watched this thing come back again. And he said, again, it was about the size of a basketball, and he said there appeared to be like two dark lines that seemed to be black or dark blue in color. These lines extended from the center of the sphere into a V-like pattern to the top edge. And positioned in the center of the V was a dark round dot that was the same color as the two lines. It almost gave the impression that it was an eye. And when the object turned before it rose the first time, he said from the back section of the sphere, which was also red, there were two beams of brilliant white light about 16 inches long at about 1 inch thick that projected out from that round object. And so that was a pretty fascinating case. And there was another one in recent years as well. And this one happened in July of 2002 in an area called North Huntington. And what that involved was the fact that it was about 10 o'clock, and these people were at a local shopping center. The shopping center had just closed the stores down. They were just walking through the parking lot when they happened to run across a friend that they hadn't seen for quite a while, and they sat there, and they were talking for a while in conversation when all of a sudden one of the people said, "Look behind you," and they turned around to look to see this small round object. Now, this was only about as big as a tennis ball in diameter.
It's amazing.
And this thing, he said, was absolutely round and shiny. It was similar to a bubble, but much more solid in appearance. And it was floating only about 10 feet away from them, only about, I believe, about 6 feet up off the ground. And the one witness, he said to me, he said, "I could easily have reached over and just grabbed this thing." But he said it was moving, it was controlled, it was moving very steadily, it was moving straight, like it's as straight as an arrow, about 6 feet off the ground. And then as it kept moving down, it began to make a zigzag motion towards the left, then up to the right, and finally it just moved off. And we had checked with the National Weather Service in Pittsburgh. It was a very calm night, and yet this sphere zoomed past them as just being driven by some type of power.
Do you think it was a probe, or do you think there were little tiny occupants in the thing?
Well, the witness was convinced, having some military experience, he thought it was some type of a probe. And that's the indication we've had, the possibility over the years as well. And, you know, some of the alleged UFO abductees have reported these small spheres of light also sometimes being associated with some of their experiences as well. Whether they are the same type, of course, we have no idea.
Kind of reminds me of that Twilight Zone with Agnes Moorehead. Remember that one?
It seems familiar. I just don't remember all the details.
She was swiping at the little tiny aliens that, well, I'm not going to give it away. It was called The Invaders. It was one of the classics. One of the classics. But, you know, I guess it's very possible, Stan, that size is all relative, right? And, you know, who's to say that if there are extraterrestrials and they are on other worlds, that maybe, just maybe, that, you know, they are very minuscule, very tiny. Is it possible?
Oh, and anything's possible. And, of course, you know, one of the theories has been that these are some type of remote control surveillance devices. And there's been many, many theories over the years as to what these things are. As with all UFO reports, you know, went looking into these cases for many years and realizing, again, that a lot of things are explainable, and there's that percentage of cases of these objects that range anywhere from, as we're just talking, anywhere from inches to hundreds of feet in length, that my feeling has been for quite a while that there's no one easy explanation for this unknown category of reports. And, you know, my feeling is that a possibility that a small percentage of them could be extraterrestrial spacecraft, that some of these may be still unknown natural phenomena. And then I think there's a lot more to this than meets the eye. You know, we have very good cases over the years of solid objects that suddenly completely appear and disappear or physically change form from the witness's eyes. And there's a couple cases, I believe, in the book, Really Mysterious Pennsylvania, that really get into that. But there's so much of the phenomena that is all speculation, and we just don't know for sure what we're dealing with.
Tell me about some of these loaves of ice that fell from the sky. What was that?
Well, there was a case that happened here outside of Greensburg, Pennsylvania. And you occasionally have reports of ice falls, and quite often they're attributed to, a leakage in the aircraft, in the toilet area. But this particular case happened on a very warm summer afternoon, July of 1985, when there were six maintenance workers at this local cemetery. They were sitting there having lunch when somebody caught sight of something about 6 feet above the ground falling about 100 feet away. They all heard a loud thump, and they ran over to find these large fragments shattered and breaking up in an area about 60 feet wide. And they ran over to see that these were large chunks of ice. And the largest fragment was to be 30 inches in diameter, about 24 inches thick. And some of them, they said, were estimated to be almost as big as a loaf of bread. And one of the gentlemen was smart enough that he gathered some of the ice up, put it in a freezer, and we had a laboratory take a look at it. And from the reports we have, they were not able to find any type of bacteria that would indicate there was a typical blue ice. So there are some of these events that seem quite interesting.
What's been the most fascinating case, Dan, for you that occurred in Pennsylvania?
Oh, geez, there's so many. I would say probably the most famous is the one that we talked about with the UFO and Bigfoot in the field back on October 25th of 73.
Yeah.
But there are just so many, many different reports. And one of the other reports we have in the book deals with a very interesting close sighting. It was a multiple sighting occurred over a widespread area back a number of years ago in western Pennsylvania. And in this particular case, this was in June of 1985. This fellow had, I believe he just got home from work. He was on his way home from work. It was about 12:30 in the morning. This is near Indian Head, again up in Fayette County, as we talked about before, when he noticed a series of six lights far ahead of him. And as he's watching these lights, he soon realized they're attached to an object that his first indication was that he may be looking at what he thought may have been a Goodyear blimp. And he's watching as this object is moving relatively slow, is crossing the roadway. And as it gets lower and closer, it appears as though it's a solid object shaped like an elongated blimp. It has a solid metallic silver surface, and it's about 100 feet long. And he pulls off the road to get a better look at this thing. And the object itself is making no noise that he can hear. But however, when he gets closer, he can hear that as it's moving, he said it was like something enormous moving through the air. It was like a whooshing sound.
Mm-hmm.
And the object moved above the trees, the height of about 30 feet, and it has bright blue lights begin to emit from the bottom of the object, and they were bright enough that he could see the bottom center of the object was hollow underneath. There were six blue lights in the top that were flashing off intensity of real bright blue, and these lights spun in a counterclockwise pattern, illuminated the trees and ground below. And as he kept watching, he realized that there was no gondola, there was no blimp. So actually, at one point, he actually runs out into the field and stands right underneath this object. He's looking up at this thing, looking for some type of markings or symbols or something that says USA on it, but there's nothing there.
All right, Stan, more to come when we come right back. So, Stan, Pennsylvania gets its share of Thunderbird reports, huge flying creatures, does it?
Yes. Well, as you're aware, that Native Americans from throughout the country have had many stories they've told about these giant birds with these massive wingspans and reported in many different areas. But here in Pennsylvania, there's been a long history of them being seen up in what they call the Black Forest region of Pennsylvania and from other areas as well. And even in recent years, we've had some interesting reports from different parts of Pennsylvania. These creatures have been reported. They're generally dark brown or black in color, but what impresses most of the witnesses is the fact that they have such a huge wingspan, anywhere from sometimes estimated to be 15 to over 20 feet in length and width. And some of the reports have been very interesting. May 20th of 2008, down in Washington County, Pennsylvania, one of my associate researchers, Jim Brown, investigated the case. But that afternoon on a busy highway, people on this four-lane highway were observing what they thought at first was an aircraft moving over the trees. It was so big until they realized that the wings were actually moving. And actually this large bird, which some people said it looked more like a giant bat than a bird, came down quite low. They said it appeared they did not have any feathers, only a short dark gray or black hair on the body, and the wings appeared to be more of a membrane stretched over bone. And the report was that different motors were pulling the vehicles over, and one man reportedly was seen with a camera in his hand taking photographs of it. And that gentleman has never come forward, so if he's listening out there, hopefully he will come forward with those pictures. That might give some evidence as to what we're dealing with out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've had these Thunderbird reports for some time. I remember a few years ago, Stan, there was a fellow flying a Cessna in Alaska.
Yeah.
And one of these huge birds came up right next to him. I don't think they're condors. I think they're something else.
Well, probably one of the most interesting ones I've heard actually happened from a neighboring state, and I interviewed this fellow several times. This happened in September, early October 2007, and this is probably one of the most detailed reports I've ever heard. And this happened about 8 o'clock in the morning on a two-lane highway outside of Clendenin, West Virginia. And the man told me that he's driving down the road when suddenly he had to hit his brakes because right there in the middle of the road, only a few yards ahead of him, is this giant bird that was feeding on some type of roadkill, which he thought may have been a possum. And he said what was so amazing was that seeing this huge flying creature that it stood at least 4 feet tall, and the head of it was over the roof lining of his vehicle. And he said the head seemed to be very dominant, but not over proportioned to its body. The neck was long and somewhat crooked, and the bird itself was covered with very dark brown or black feathers. The head was featherless, but it was separated from the body by a very dominant yellowish-orange color of plumage. And the beak was very long and large, and he believed it was black in color. The eyes were very dark, and the chest area was very distinct and well-formed. But he said what was so amazing was the massive wingspan of this giant bird. And actually what he did, he went back afterwards and measured the distance because the wingspan took up both sides of the edges of the roadway, which was 21 feet. And he said the wings were, as he could remember, almost like the arms of a human are attached. It had shoulders and had a very muscular upper torso, and the wings were as if they were its arms. And he said that at one point they kind of stared at each other. And he said that the bird turned from him in an awkward way. It began to run from the vehicle as it fly away. And he said it was more like a jumping, hopping run in which it took probably just about 5 yards for its huge wingspan lifted up into the air. And he said the wingtip stirred the dust and the gravel on both sides of the road as it ran to become airborne. And he got a very good look at it, and he said he felt that he was actually in a slight state of shock after he saw this thing, and he wished he was able to take a picture of it. And he said afterwards he went and did some research on birds, and he said the closest thing he could find was a drawing of a teratorn, an extinct bird.
Do you think Mothman reports might have been based on this too?
Well, I've heard, of course, I'm pretty familiar with the Mothman reports. And, in fact, little known, and I don't have a lot of detail, but back about that same time, and, in fact, curiously, just a couple months ago, I talked to another gentleman who was speaking at a local conference, and he had a story about one of his friends who had reportedly an encounter with a Mothman-type creature in the Pittsburgh area. And then I was also aware of another one, which I thought at first when I heard his, it was the same one, but apparently it's different. So we know of at least two incidents of what appear to be some Mothman-type creatures that occurred about the same time in the Pittsburgh area that was occurring down in West Virginia. And they seem to be somewhat different that in some of the cases with the Mothman, you got the reports of the luminous glowing eyes. Mm-hmm. And in most of these Thunderbird reports, that's not a common trait.
What about the Black Panthers in the area?
Well, the Black Panther reports, again, are very, very interesting. And, of course, most people, when they talk about Black Panthers, are referring more to the Black Jaguar that's common to Central and South America or the Black Leopard from mm-hmm. Asia or Africa, but, of course, not common in our part of the country or in the areas outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where some of these events have occurred. And over the years, there have been many, many reports of what people describe as Black Panthers being seen here in Pennsylvania. And there have been a number of incidents. I remember talking to a hunter, this is going back probably 10, 15 years, up in Armstrong County, where he came across one of these very large creatures and got a very good look at it. It came up on a big rock and was staring at him and was growling at him, and he thought the thing was about to pounce on him. And I remember him telling me they took his big knife and put it in his mouth in case he'd have to grab it as a last backup for defense. But the thing just turned around and went back into the woods. And very interesting case happened right outside of Pittsburgh, in an area outside of Pittsburgh called Bloomfield, back in March 1983. And I interviewed the fellow soon after this occurred. And what it was, this happened in the morning. This was a auto body mechanic who worked for a large car dealership in that area, and he was working on the car about 9:30 that morning when all of a sudden he heard this loud thump, and he looked up to see this huge black cat that leaped over the fender and hood of the car coming from a wooded area, and it was carrying a dead animal in its mouth, which he thought was a large dead rat. And he said the animal itself had a body about 3 to 3.5 feet long, tail about 4 feet long. He said it was just beautiful. It was solid black, shiny body, had a large head, the ears were upright, and the eyes were dark, and it had fang-like teeth, which were brownish in color. And he said that it made a continuous sound. It was not a growl and not a meow, but like a heavy, deep, heavy breathing, but it had a very putrid smell, almost like a urine odor that emanated from the animal. And he watched this thing for a short time when it went back into the wooded area, and apparently several other people also saw it. And about the same time, they noticed a smaller one over in the woods about the same time that it was going back over towards the woods. Well, anyhow, the Pittsburgh police were notified, and there was quite an extensive search by the Pittsburgh police and the animal officers in the area, and they searched that area for quite a while with weapons and tranquilizer guns, but they never did find what the animals were. And that's what's so typical of these Black Panther reports, because when you get these type of events, first thing you do is check to see if there's, and it's not very common, these things could escape, but you check the local zoos,
sure,
and check to see if there's any carnivores coming through the area.
Or like petting farms? What about petting farms, Stan, and they escape or something?
No, I mean, those type of things were checked at the time these events happened. There was no reports like that.
Now, no one ever captures one. You know, we don't get a Black Panther like that. We don't get a Bigfoot. We don't get a Thunderbird. Why not?
Yeah, and that's always been the question. Something's interesting about the Black Panthers. Now, I should also tell you, you know, another cryptozoological event that we deal with in Pennsylvania has been the many, many reports of mountain lions or cougars, which, of course, they've been extinct in certain areas of the United States, especially in Pennsylvania since the late 1870s, they estimate. But there have been hundreds of reported sightings since that time, and not only in Pennsylvania, but along a lot of other eastern states as well. And it's not so unusual because of the fact that we know they existed, but officially they've been declared extinct. But many, many reports. And over the years, there have been people who have taken videos, which some of the videos are pretty good. Some of them don't really show a lot of information to really be able to be sure what they were seeing. I've seen even recent years some videos of alleged Black Panthers that have been taken in Pennsylvania. Back in 1984, I believe it was, the police up in the area called my research group at that time to help investigate a series of mountain lion sightings that were occurring up in that area, and we did find what appeared to be a very good trail of cougar prints, and I did make a very good cast of one of those, which showed details enough that we are quite certain that was indeed that of a mountain lion. But over the years, when you get these reports, we've also get reports of Black Panthers, which seem to be much more unusual. And interestingly, and there's other reports from around the country, too, the Black Panthers seem to be much more unusual in comparison to the typical cougar mountain lion reports we get. And, in fact, there have been instances where it seems as though the Black Panthers sometimes seem to show up in areas where there's been active Bigfoot activity going on. For example, back in the 1980s, I remember an area down around the Apollo, Vandergrift area where there had been a number of Bigfoot reports, and then we began to get reports from other people who were seeing a large Black Panther. I remember one family told me how one of these huge black cats had blocked the roadway of their vehicle at one point. And so some of these stories are very, very intriguing.
What color are the eyes of these panthers?
In some cases, I believe people reported they were kind of greenish, and but I think in the one report in Pittsburgh, the man described them more as a dark color.
Dark, okay. Not red, though.
Not red, no.
All right.
Not
what
a
about,
report that I can think of.
What's the story, Stan, of the mysterious fowl eater?
Well, that was another event, and we had looked into. That was outside of the Pittsburgh area. And we had been looking into, actually, some other reports that were going on about that time. And that dealt with other mountain lion reports, other types of strange activity was going on. And we were notified that there had been another incident on this farming area. And we went out to talk to the people, and we found that about 3 o'clock in the morning on this one particular night that some odd events had been taking place. People were awakened the next morning to find that two of the turkeys, they found two live turkeys on the front porch of their home, which is about 75 feet away from the poultry pen. And late, they went over to find there was 9 other turkeys that lay dead and scattered about in the snow fence around the pen. And each weighed, I believe, about 10 to 12 pounds. And whatever broke into the pen and had attacked them apparently had quite an appetite, assuming it was one animal. And we can't say it couldn't have been more than one. We can't be sure. But the breast meat had been eaten from each one, as well as some of the organs, such as the heart and liver. And whatever had gone into that area, there were 5 horizontal boards, each about 5 to 6 inches wide, about 3/8 of an inch thick, that had been torn off to gain access to those turkeys. And whatever entered the pen had to cross about a foot over a board to get inside. And the interesting thing was the fact that there was so much meat consumed that evening by whatever it was that, it's a real mystery of what it was. And the fact is that nobody was awakened here. All that commotion must have been going on, and yet the people were not that far away. Nothing awoke them, and the dogs weren't barking during that time.
Any other strange entities reported out there in the Pennsylvania area?
Oh, yeah. We've had a lot of different things, from cases where UFO cases where we've had landings over the years reported going back many, many years to the 60s, people claiming to have seen landed objects. Some of those reports were more of the typical humanoid, standard humanoid, larger, 5-6 foot tall, with sometimes metallic outfits. And then you had some reports of smaller humanoid type figures reported as well, such as the one we talked about in February 1968, where they saw the small humanoid creatures on the catwalk. So we've had those. And then we've had some reports of these almost like glowing entities that have been reported. And there's been several of those type of reports. One case that was looked into, and I'm trying to think, that was going back several number of years ago, happened back in 2000, and again, where else but up in Fayette County. And that occurred August 3rd of 2007, about 10 p.m. And there were several, I believe 5 witnesses out in this farming community, and they observed this being about 5 feet tall, which had long and slender extremities. It carried what appeared to be like a brown staff about 5 feet long, and they watched this thing for about a minute from a distance, about 250 feet away, they estimated. And the interesting thing was that it appeared to be gliding about 6 inches above the ground. And they all thought this thing was very, very unusual. It looked more like an alien-type thing that they had never seen before. And so you do get these reports of sometimes glowing figures, gliding entities, and over the years there's been all different types of things being reported. And even some very strange case that we got a report on September 19th last year of a strange segmenting snake-like creature on a Pennsylvania roadway outside of Youngwood, Pennsylvania.
So what do you mean by snake-like?
Well, It's a interesting story. Family, this is daylight, about 3:45 in the afternoon. It was a beautiful afternoon, sunny afternoon. People were riding down the highway. It was a husband, wife, and a child. And all of a sudden, as they're going down the road, the woman screams out to her husband, "Watch out for that snake." And he slows down to see what appears to be like a black snake about 4 feet long, was slowly moving across the road from right to left. And the head of the reptile was in the center of the roadway. And the fellow said that it looked like a snake, but it did not slither like a snake, but it was more like a gliding real slow. And he says, as they watched this thing, that all of a sudden, he said, the body of the snake broke up into approximately 8 individual creatures. He said that it was almost like it exploded. He said each creature was about 4 inches in length, but stretched up to about 6 inches as they moved. They were tubular shaped with no tail, charcoal black in color. And he said Each creature seemed to have 4 feet, two on each side of the body. The feet were hard to describe since they were black and the same color as the body. They did not see any eyes, but at one point, one of the mouths of the creature opened up very widely. And the vehicle stopped about 20 feet away from what they were watching. He said each one moved individually, erratically, and extremely fast in the road, and that they moved like an inchworm with the back hunched up and then stretching flat, growing at least 2 additional inches of length each time they moved. Then he said all the individual creatures positioned themselves to form like a perfect black circle in the middle of the road. And at that point, an additional creature, similar, crawled out of the grass from the driver's left side and moved quite quickly and joined the others in the circle. And he said they all apparently joined into joined into one snake-like form again, as there was no space that could be seen between the units as they joined together, and they quickly moved off the road into the grass. The guy tried to tell me, he said, it was just unbelievable. He said it was like watching a computer-generated graphic animation. It happened so quickly. And he was just couldn't believe what he was saying.
That is amazing. So much out there in Pennsylvania, really mysterious Pennsylvania. Where do you get the book, Stan?
Well, they can order the book through my website at stangordon.info, and I'll be glad to send a personalized signed copy out to people. Or they can call my hotline if people want to report a sighting. I deal mainly in Pennsylvania reports, but always interested to hear from others as well. They can call 724-838-7768. They can also order the book by phone. And if they want to email me, it's paufo@comcast.net.
Do you still get calls?
Oh, calls come in here constantly. Between emails and phone calls, it never ends. In fact, I just a few days ago interviewed a new Kecksburg witness who had never come forward before.
We're going to take calls with you next, Stan, on Coast to Coast AM. Got to tell you, Stan, fascinating work, by the way. You can
appreciate
tell
it. Thank you.
A lot of years of experience doing this and chasing it. And you were saying you still get calls. They keep coming in. Tell me about this Kecksburg one.
Well, you know, I'm still getting reports, and we're still following up on this. And just the other day, I talked to a person who had an interesting story to tell me. She couldn't remember a lot of the details because it's been so many years, but she remembered basically what happened. And this person, she was involved in a high position with the emergency services for the County Civil Defense at the time. She also was working for an independent ambulance service, and they had heard that something had reportedly crashed, possibly an aircraft or something crashed near Kecksburg. So they thought that in an unofficial capacity, they would drive out to the area to offer their assistance. And they got out into the area, and they said they got only so far. They could see in the distance what appeared to be searchers with flashlights going through the fields ahead, but they were stopped. And she couldn't remember if it was some local civilian authorities or if it was a military, but they stopped them and they told them they were there to offer their assistance. They said, that's as far as you get, and that's as far as they got. And they didn't want their assistance. They turned them back. And, You know, whatever happened after that night, apparently it was of some importance, the fact that the military arrived on the scene. And the area was cordoned off, and there were civilians who have gone on record and said that they, in fact, people were stopped from trying to enter into the woods. Object reportedly fell at gunpoint. So the question is, what was so important down in those woods that the military didn't want the civilians to see, even though we did have some independent people who did get down and did see the object? And as we said, from what we know, that object went out of there about 1 o'clock in the morning, and we believe it went first to Lockbourne Air Force Base and over to Wright-Patterson. And also, I want to mention, there's a lot of interesting details which have surfaced in recent years. And a couple things we're hoping that with your audience, that one, that some of the military personnel who may have been involved in that operation may now, after so many years, may be willing to talk to us. Of course, we will keep their identity anonymous if they request. And two, there's been reports for years that there were alleged photos taken of the object. And I've talked to people who swear that they did see black and white photographs of the object were taken down in the woods at that time, but nobody has ever come forward with it. If anybody around knows where those photos are, or anybody was on the scene, and he may have even taken pictures of the military trucks that night or any activity around that area. That could be most helpful to us in trying to solve this mystery. So they can also contact me through my hotline or through my website or email. And I believe you have a link on your at your homepage to my website as well.
Of course. And let's go to the calls now. Truck driving in Arizona, west of the Rockies. Randy, it's your turn. Hi, Randy.
Hi there, George. Stan.
Thanks for calling.
Good evening. Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Good, good. Anyway, talking about them, Thunderbirds. I was, this is about 2.5 years ago, and I would pick up a load from another driver at Searchlight, Nevada. And that's like about 80 or about 65 miles south of Las Vegas. And as I was going back to Las Vegas with my load, and I'm going down the, it's a four lane, and I see about probably 3/4 mile in front of me, I'm seeing what I thought was a bunch of big black ravens jumping around, you know, on some roadkill. Mm-hmm. And as I got closer, I noticed that this is not a bunch of ravens. And I'm looking, I'm getting closer, and then the driver, there was a tanker driver, he was in front of me, and he got over into the left lane. And as we got closer, now I'm only probably about 150 yards from it, and I started slowing down, and this huge bird stood up, turned around and looked at me, and I'm not kidding you, he was 5 feet tall. I was blown away. And the tanker driver, he was getting way over to the left, so I got over to the left, and as I was coming up on it, all of a sudden the bird opens its wings, just, and these wings stretched across the road. And I went, oh my, and so I was kind of like leaning to the left in my seat thinking I'm going to hit this thing, and it took, all it did was took three big flaps of its wings, and it was gone. And it had one complete coyote in its talons. We're talking about a full dog, you know. And as it flew away, it looked at me, and its eyes were huge, a huge beak. And I could see it very well. And its tail had to be 4 feet wide, or maybe better. And one thing I noticed on the tail, it had a stripe across its tail that was kind of a cream-colored. And if anybody's ever seen a bird with that on it, then that could probably tell you what kind of bird it was besides being a Thunderbird.
Did it scare you at all, Randy?
Well, it was blew me away. When it and I'm thinking, how big is the – the wingspan on it was unbelievable, because I'm thinking – okay, a truck is about 8.5 feet wide, right?
Yep.
Well, this wingspan was over two trailer widths. It was the biggest thing I've ever seen.
What do you think, Stan?
Well, again, I've heard very similar accounts, and in fact, that's very similar to the story we just talked about from West Virginia from 2007.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'll tell you what, and when it picked up the coyote, I was blown away. I mean, here it's carrying probably a 40-pound dog like it was nothing.
Did it look like a condor to you, Randy?
Oh, no. This looked like it looked like a huge eagle, a gigantic eagle.
Yeah.
And I'm not kidding you, its eyes were bigger than my fist.
That is amazing. All right, that's a great story. Thanks for sharing that one with
us,
Randy. And you got millions of them like that, Stan, I bet, stories like that.
Well, I don't know about – we have a lot of them in Pennsylvania, but, again, all throughout the country, we've heard similar reports. In fact, from other countries as well, people have reported seeing some of these giant birds. And, again, as this gentleman just talked about, some of these are very close-range reports. I mean, you've got cases where there have been misidentifications that people have not been able to judge distance properly and sizes, but some of these reports are very close-range. And in the mysterious Pennsylvania, as you've noticed in the book, some of the stories I have in there are very close-range accounts of encounters with strange creatures and UFOs, and that's what's so fascinating about some of the events that go on.
Absolutely. Okay, let's go back to the calls. Let's go to Mineral Point, Pennsylvania. Walt, you're there. Go ahead, Walt.
Yes, I'm here, George. Longtime listener, and last time I called in the show was probably about 4 or 5 years ago.
All right. Well, thanks for supporting us, Walter. Go ahead.
Okay. Stan, got a I got several real good Bigfoot encounter stories for you. I emailed them to you. I'm going to make the best one brief as I can.
Thank you.
It was right about 1 o'clock at night. It's about 2 years ago, and I'm laying on my bed in the exact same spot. I was watching a show on the History Channel. It was about 1 o'clock at night, and my motion light was on. And all of a sudden, I hear this screaming outside my house, and right across the street. I mean, I could tell where it was coming from. It just sounded like a woman screaming, and I'm looking. And I'm not seeing anything. And I have my window open. I have a screen in my window. And I can hear this thing walking. But then all of a sudden, the motion light goes out. And I remembered from past listening that a Bigfoot does that. Sometimes they scream. And so, I don't know if you want to hear the rest of it. But I hunt. I reach under the bed, grab the rifle, load her up, 303 Enfield. Scope covers up, safety on. And I'm watching for this thing. Motion light comes on. About 35 to 50 yards across the street, there's an empty lot. Grass was about a foot high over there. That thing was standing there at the edge of that lot by the wood's edge. And when I threw that up there to look at it, it took about 2 steps back in out of that light. And then I heard a rabbit squealing and the screaming, going on again. And then the rabbit squealing, all of a sudden I hear rabbit choking. The screaming stopped. And it went away with the rabbit because I could hear it walking away. Well, next morning, I go to work, told my friend about it, told him, I says, I'm taking my camera over. I'm going to see if I can find some pictures of footprints. Well, wouldn't you know it, I went over there, gun and camera in hand, because I don't know how these things really are towards a person. Gun and camera in hand. I got one nice good picture of a footprint, and then I took another picture of my foot beside the footprint, and it's about 6 inches longer than my foot. And this ain't the first time I've encountered one. Last time I encountered one was October 30th last year. My fiance and I spotted one, same spot, across the street from my house.
There's probably a whole family out there, Walt. What do you think?
Well, see, the thing of it is, this was a hot area back in the 70s, and I know, matter of fact, two retired police officers that have seen them back then, and when I was talking to one, I told him about it. He says, the exact same thing I described to him, he described it back to me in detail. And
What county are you in?
I'm in Cambria.
In Cambria, okay. Well, yes, there's a history of Bigfoot sightings up in Cambria County, and there was activity there in the 70s and 80s, and I investigate a number of cases up there, and as recent as April 23rd, there's a group here called the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society, which I'm in touch with them, and they had a report, and there have been a number of sightings and very close reports. In fact, some of them are mentioned in the book, a very close-range sighting where a woman basically almost hit one in a car in daylight is mentioned in there, but this is April 23rd. Near Scottsdale, PA, where they had a report, a man was awakened by the sounds of his dogs barking, and he went to investigate, and he heard these loud screaming sounds like a woman screaming. He looked out the window to see this large creature on all fours walking around his yard, but he was stunned to see the creature stand up on two legs, about 6 feet tall, very thin, and covered in dark-colored hair. The creature walked off into a patch of woods behind the house. Man states that it was not a bear, because he could see the long arm swing like a man's. And they went out to investigate and found one possible large track about 16 inches long. So these things are continuing to be reported. There's been quite a bit of activity even in the last year. And I can tell you historically, the sounds we've had people report to us have been typical of one, like a woman in pain screaming, a baby crying, a high-pitched bird whistle. And another one has been very common is like somebody with asthma, like a very heavy, deep breathing sound. And we had cases where they were able to seem to be able to mimic other sounds, including human sounds. I mean, we had one incident on a farm where this creature kept coming back, where a woman was walking over to her vehicle, and this thing was standing right next to the vehicle. She was thinking it was a tree. It took a step out in front of her. She was only face-to-face with this thing pretty much, and she screamed, and it screamed back at her almost the same way. It ran into the woods, and she ran off as well.
Chad's in Galveston, Texas. Go ahead, Chad. Thanks for calling.
Hello.
Yep.
How are you?
Hi. Good.
Listen, I'm from the Hill Country, Texas, north of San Antone, and I'm familiar with a cat named the Jacaranda. Are you aware of that?
Yes.
Cat? Hello?
Yes, he is. Yes,
yeah.
He is.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's well, there was a cat that we were, myself, four of the policemen from different agencies across the state of Texas were traveling up a road in the Hill Country. We were at a school, and a cat ran across the highway, and it cleared, the bar ditch on the side of the road, and then it cleared about I guess it would be 25 feet from the road and hit the pasture and was gone. The cat was probably four to five feet in length and probably, a couple of feet tall. But, I just wanted to ask if you were familiar with the Jacaranda, because we're getting a lot of sightings of those in Texas. And there was actually a guy that hit one in the truck that was documented in Palestine, Texas, in East Texas. But, I was wondering if you were familiar with the Jacaranda.
I've heard reports, and I've heard reports in that area. But, again, while I try to monitor as much as I can from around the country, I deal mainly with cases here closer to Pennsylvania.
Okay, very good. Thanks for that call, though. There's creatures everywhere. Let's go to Redondo Beach, California. Mary, you're up with us. Hi, Mary.
Oh, hi, George. How are you?
Okay, all is well. Thanks.
Oh, good. I'm a fellow Michigander, born in Lansing, Michigan, and my mother was from Dearborn, but I live in California now. So, Mr. Gordon, hello. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you. I'm fine.
Good. This is a story from a long time ago, but it was pretty extraordinary. It was 1981. I was living in New York City at the time, and my boyfriend lived in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and was working there. He'd only been there about 3 or 4 months, and I got a train at Grand Central and went there on a Friday night. He picked me up at the train station, and we were on the freeway going back to his apartment, and it was a night that it was a beautiful fall night with millions of stars, and it was just, I kept remarking to him about the stars. Because when you live in New York City, you know, the lights obscure those stars. So it's just so arresting to me to see them. And we're talking, and I hadn't seen him for about 3 weeks, so I kept punching his arm because he wasn't paying attention to me. He kept looking through the windshield up into the sky. And he said, look, look, look. And I looked up in through the windshield, and there was an aircraft carrier going across the freeway. And the reason why I say that is because it was so huge, it was a black monolith that you could see the outline of because of the stars. And I imagined that it would be like lying on the bottom of the ocean and watching an aircraft carrier go over you. And it was so quiet, and we couldn't hear anything, but it was huge. It must have been a couple of miles long and maybe a mile wide. And we were just beside ourselves, and it was going slowly across the freeway, couldn't hear a thing. And I leaned outside of my window trying to get the attention of this couple in a car with two kids in the back seat. I kept pointing up with my pointer finger, look, screaming at them to look up. And a thought came to me that, oh, they're not supposed to see this, because I kept trying to get their attention. And it was so strange because there were 2 9-year-old kids in the back seat, or 8 or 9, and they didn't even respond to this crazy woman hanging out of the window trying to tell them to look up in the sky. So I forgot, I didn't do that anymore. And my boyfriend and I were so excited. We just kept driving down the freeway. And on the tail end of this huge monolith, now, my boyfriend didn't see this because he was driving, but I saw 3 lights come out in an arc. There were 2 white ones and 1 slightly pink one, in an arc. They just came out, and they were so tiny. And I saw them fly to the horizon, and we kept watching them for about an hour. We would stop our car on the freeway every now and then and get out and lean against the car and watch them. And they would zoom down zoom all the way down the freeway and then come back and reappear, and they kind of float back and forth like a yo-yo would if it was just kind of moving, kind of up and down. And we did that for a while. That was for about an hour. We would follow them, and we finally realized that when we would stop, they would stop. So at some point, we pulled into an industrial park. This was a Friday night, about 7:30, 8 o'clock. Everybody had gone home for the weekend. We left the car right in the road right there in the industrial park. And we were about 20 feet in front of the car, just standing there with our arms folded, watching these little lights on the horizon that kept moving and kind of dancing. And I said, well, let's follow them some more. And I ran back to the car. And by the time I got in the passenger seat, my boyfriend said, you've got to see this. And I got out of the car, and there was a saucer coming right over him, and it came over his car where I was standing.
This sounds just like the Phoenix lights. And have you gotten reports of those big ones, Stan?
Oh, yes. Over the years, we have some reports of very large objects. And, you know, what's so interesting, and I mentioned this in the book, that, you know, over the years, a lot of the skeptics always say, well, why do these things only appear over rural areas? But as I mentioned in the book, there have been many sightings over the larger cities in Pennsylvania. There have been sightings on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. And so we've had reports of huge rectangular objects, triangular objects.
Oh, they're everywhere, Stan. They're everywhere. We'll be back with final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. You had a segment on underground rumblings, sounds underneath. What do you think's going on there, Stan? They building a special little underground city under there or what?
Well, we don't really know about that, but occasionally we've had reports, especially along the Chestnut Ridge, of underground sounds, and there was no indication of any type of drilling or mining going on at the time. And if memory serves me, going way back in the 60s, there was one report we had of somebody seeing some type of like an opening into the rock formation out there. But that's the only time we ever heard a story like that. It's going back many, many years. So we hear those stories every once in a while from different areas of Pennsylvania.
Let's go to the phones again now and wrap things up. Very fast night. Alexander in Greenville, South Carolina. Go ahead, Alexander.
Hello, George Norrie.
Yes,
this
sir.
This is Alexander in Greenville, South Carolina. I would like to know about the UFO that I had seen in 1952 on Long Island. It was like a two-type pie plates on top of each other. In the center, there was an egg-shaped dome. There was round windows, a hatchway 3 feet high. The craft was 30 feet in diameter. It carried red and blue navigational lights. It carried a crew of three, about three little guys, about 3 feet tall, large head, small body, green uniforms, blue caps, had an insignia on the side of the ship, which was a half moon, like the one that Lonnie Zamora saw in Arizona, or upon me, in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And it changed in colors from bluish white, bluish green, reddish orange, and brightish white amber. When it was in its reddish orange, you could see like it was like an artificial meteor sitting in the woods. And the object changed in colors of bluish white, bluish green, reddish orange, and brightish white amber. When it came in, it gave off like a bluish white flash of light. And when it took off, it gave off a bluish white flash of light.
And what year was this?
In 1952, on the 27th of August, 1952. And the week beforehand, the man in Florida was burned in the Everglades in 1952 on August 19th at 10:30 in the evening.
And maybe by that object, huh?
No, and the reason that Bigfoot appeared or Mothman appeared in West Virginia was because of the encounter with me in 52. On the 27th of August, because on September the 12th, the Kathleen May family saw their encounter at around 10:30 at night.
All right, that's pretty good detail there, Stan. I don't know how far back you went, Stan. How many years back did you go?
Well, I started to get out in the field in 1965. I started my research when I was 10 in 1949, but my files go back in Pennsylvania. I do, again, mainly Pennsylvania. They go back to the late 1800s up to the present day. So I have a tremendous number of reports. And, of course, what he described in 52 is very typical of some of the reports, not always with occupants, but the craft he described has been fairly common reported over the years, especially in the 50s, 60s, 70s. So we've heard those type of reports, of course, before.
Did we have a flap over Washington, D.C. in 52?
Oh, yeah. There was that flap in 52. And there was another flap in 65. Then we had that big wave in 1973.
Let's go to Phil, truck driving in Canada. Hello, Phil. Good morning.
How you gentlemen doing this morning?
Good.
Very good. Thank you.
I've got a quick question for Stan, but George, real quick first, I heard you praising truck drivers a while ago.
Yep.
And I want you to know I stay out 4 or 5 weeks at a time, and I appreciate you, brother.
Thank you. You too.
Stan, my question for you is I live in the northwest up in Bellingham, Washington. Ever heard of any stories of Bigfoots in that area?
Oh, Washington State is historically known out in the Pacific Northwest for tremendous amount of Bigfoot activity, especially back in the 70s. So, yes, there's been many reports from that area.
Yeah, I thought I'd heard some, but I'm not there enough to see anything. So I appreciate it.
All right, Phil, keep driving out there. Keep truck driving. They keep us going all the time. Stan, this second book that you're working on, Silent Invasion, the Pennsylvania UFO Bigfoot casebook, has anybody ever reported to have been hurt by one of these creatures?
I can't think of any that I can really, nothing really overt that I can think of. I mean, I've heard a couple stories over the years. There's a possibility where something may have happened, but they can't be confirmed. It's not typical. As many people told me, under the circumstances, these things wanted to catch up with and wanted to hurt them. They could easily have outrun them and have done something to them, but that doesn't seem to be the case. They've been very curious of people. They've approached people quite closely in some cases. But in regards to people, no. We had some cases back in the 70s where they seemed to have a great dislike for dogs, and there were some reports of them attacking dogs. But other than that, nothing I can think of right off the top of my head.
Okay, next up we go to Shinstown, West Virginia, east of the Rockies. Todd, you're on Coast to Coast with Stan Gordon. Go ahead.
Hello.
Todd. Hi.
Hey, wow, Stan, George, both of you guys. It's great to meet you guys. You're on the phone. My dad might have known you guys a couple times. At least I know Stan, my dad worked with you in Greensburg.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, I can't give out last names, they say. But,
okay.
Bill? William? Geez, I wish I could.
Maybe you can email me and we can find out who it is.
Well, he told me about a.
You still with us? Nope, he's gone. He lost us right at the end. Try to get back to us if you can. We'll go next to Louisville, Kentucky on the Skype line. Alan, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
All is well, Alan. Thanks.
I was driving home about 2 years ago and on a rural area about 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, one of the roads that just cut through the section of town where actually the horse farms and all. And I come up and I've seen about 2 or 3 sets of red glowing eyes, and they did not move like deer. I mean, they were, you know, as I got closer, they almost looked like people. So needless to say, I found a way to turn my car around, and I went back the other direction and went home by the interstate.
Do you have any idea
what that might have been? And in that same area in Fairdale, they recently have had a sighting of something that they claim to be a Bigfoot that made national news.
And what state are you calling from where you saw this?
Louisville, Kentucky.
Oh, Louisville, Kentucky. Okay. Well, again, you know, I can't say what you saw without having somebody really investigate it and look over the area. But, you know, there are some nocturnal animals out there who can give you some pretty good eyeshine at night as well. And but however, we've had some very interesting cases of Bigfoot creatures that people report with glowing red and orange eyes or orangish red eyes. And so those have been reported over the years from a lot of different people.
What about cattle mutilation cases, Stan? Any of those?
They're not very typical up in this part of the country. Very rarely do we hear those type of reports. We looked into a couple many, many years ago. And there was a case here in Pennsylvania back in 1986, and again, where else up in Fayette County, where a gentleman had discovered that a 700-pound cow had mysteriously died. It was found in a grassy field where the other animals had been roaming. When he came across the carcass, he said the end of the tail was cut down to the bone, yet some of the tail remained attached. The left ear was cut off, and a section of the head was also missing. The throat was cut into the jugular vein. And the interesting thing was there was no sign of blood anywhere around there. And it's one of the few cases where we heard of something along that line, but they're not very common here in Pennsylvania.
First-time caller, we've got Scott in New Haven, Michigan. Hi, Scott. Good morning.
Morning, George. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Yes, this doesn't pertain to Pennsylvania, but it pertains to basically, I was in South Carolina. You was talking about spheres. I've seen two of them actually in South Carolina. I don't know what they were. They have no explanation, but they were just spheres in the sky and no noise whatsoever. And I've seen this. And then when I came to Michigan a couple of months ago, I seen the same sphere in the sky again. It was over by where I work. I'm not going to say where I work, but over where I work. And I just, you got my curiosity up. And also, in South Carolina, has there been any Bigfoot sightings? Because I think I actually did see something. I'm not saying it's Bigfoot. I'm going to say it's not.
There have been a lot of sightings down in that region. I don't know what the sphere was. Stan, I'm not sure you do either, but in terms of Bigfoot sightings, they're all over that region, aren't they? Let's go next to Dennis in Norris Lake, Tennessee. Go ahead, Dennis.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Excellent morning. Discussion. 1952 is my birthday. That UFO dropped me off, and after I was assimilated into human society, I went to college. In Northeast Pennsylvania, it changed.
What did you take up?
I studied chemistry. I wanted to ask Stan if he was familiar with a geographic feature up there called a Boulder Lake or Boulder Field, if you'd ever heard of that place.
And from what area of Pennsylvania? I couldn't hear you.
It's in the northeast corner of the state.
No, I can't say that I'm familiar with that offhand.
What's the significance of it, Dennis?
Well, it's an area. I believe it was called Boulder Lake, and it's some sort of a geographic deposit, probably glacial, and it's comprised of these reddish rocks between the size of bowling balls and basketballs, and it looks just like a big lake, only it's full of these rocks. And there's all kinds of strange animal sightings and UFO sightings, and people go up there and see it, and there's all kinds of folklore. And I just wondered if Stan had ever heard of that place.
Nope.
No, I haven't, but I will do some research on it and see if I have it listed under some other name in that area.
Well worth checking into, to be sure. What other regions? I know you concentrate on Pennsylvania. Could you comfortably say that every state has similar stories?
Oh, yes. From what I hear that, I'm in touch with researchers throughout the country and other parts of the world, and throughout the country, many states are reporting a lot of activity from West Virginia, Ohio, Indiana, Maryland. There's a long history of very similar accounts, and it's really hard to say why we have so many in Pennsylvania. Of course, since 1969, I've had my hotline open, and during the 70s, it became very well known across the state of Pennsylvania. So it was one of the few areas where people saw something, had an encounter with something unusual. Quite often, I would have the report routed to us so we at least learned about it. But, after all these years of all the reports you looked into, can you imagine how many sightings go on out there we don't hear about? So we just hear about a small percentage. So it's probably amazing what really goes on, and we never hear about it.
Good point. Cleveland, Ohio, we go. Hello, Earl. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Go ahead, Earl.
Oh, good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Morning.
I have a I saw a movie that came on Channel 10, which was a cable channel out of Canada in the early 1980s, like 80, 81. And the name of this movie was a documentary. It was called Lord of the UFOs. And it showed different scientists One in particular I think you might be interested in, he was doing work on pain. He was from Harvard University, and he used an apparatus that had a plant as a part of the circuitry. And he photographed what he called plasmic vampires. He actually witnessed cattle mutilation. And what was so interesting about that, another segment, you know, they were going after the plasma of the animals. And what was so interesting about that, there were a group of scientists from the U.S. and from Russia that were working together, and it listed all their names. They were working on the border of France and Spain. They had built a building that was built to the specification that was given by some alien. And it said that they had to use plasmic energy to travel through space. What was interesting was that they said they almost bypassed our solar system, but when they came to Saturn, the rings of Saturn held all the information of the of our solar system. One other thing, they also showed where in Morocco, and they showed the newspaper headline that a UFO hovered up over a downtown city for every day for a month and then just took off. And it said hundreds of thousands of people believed in UFOs in Morocco. Now, when I finally got a VCR, this movie came back on a UHF channel, but it was completely stripped of all the documentation.
Ah,
I'm wondering if you have ever heard of this movie, because I can't find it.
Lord of the UFOs, huh?
The Lord of the UFOs.
I have not heard about it. Stan, have you?
I think there was another one called Overlords of the UFO. Maybe that's what he's referring to.
Could that be it, Earl?
I have a copy of it, if I can find it. I had a flood in my basement that messed up a lot of tapes.
Oh, no.
From the UHF channel, and maybe I can find it. Maybe this still work. But you said it was the Overlords?
I believe that's what it is. It's going from a memory from a long time ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. Some of the things I said sound familiar to you.
Bits and pieces. It's been a long, long time since I saw that.
All right, Stan, we only got about a minute or so left. I want you to tell us a little bit more about your book. And about your website, you've got a lot of information on it.
Yes, the book is Really Mysterious Pennsylvania. It's just released. It has a lot of very detailed, very close-range encounters with strange creatures and UFOs. People can obtain that from stangordon.info, or they can call my hotline at 724-838-7768. They can also obtain a copy of my award-winning DVD on the Kecksburg crash called Kecksburg, the Untold Story, which has a lot of information that they've not seen on television. And they can also email me at paufo@comcast.net.
You are a wealth of information, Stan. Thank you so much for being on the program.
And thank you for having me, George. Appreciate it.
Let's not wait 7 years again next time, okay?
Very good. Take care, and thanks again.
All right, that's Stan Gordon. And, again, his website linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. It's a good read, by the way. Those of you in Pennsylvania definitely should pick this up. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe.